Today on Real Ghost Stories Online, a group of housemates is confused and terrified by what they can only describe as an entity with malicious intentions.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802 or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You are about to enter the world of the unknown and quite possibly the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
That it is. 855-853-4802 is our phone number. At Real Ghost Stories Online, to share your real ghost stories with us, we'd love to hear them. Of course, you can write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. And if you like the show, well, become a supporter. Get yourself all the bonus episodes of the show that we put out for you every single week, advanced episodes of the show, and more. Sign up to be a EPP, extra podcast person, over at ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. Get all that stuff I talked about, and of course, your support is what keeps this thing on the air. Tony and Todd with you on today's episode of the program, and the day we are recording this is the 15th of January, March. I don't know what month it is, but interesting breaking news. This is going to air on April 19th, some interesting news connecting to ghosts and one of my favorite cases that I've always been fascinated by. Ronnie DeFeo, Ronnie, what's his name? The one who did all the murders of Amityville, dead as of today in prison. Ronnie DeFeo. Yeah, it is Ronnie DeFeo. He died in prison, 69 years old. I don't know what the cause was, but it's kind of one of those, oh, I didn't know he was still alive, people.
Well, you just blew me away. I thought for sure I would have saw something that came across, you know, the wires or something like that to say that. What? Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, it is one of those things where it would have been really interesting to interview him, because he's one who had so many different stories about what happened, everything from, you know, saying he was possessed to then saying he made it all up. His personality and his story changed so many times. It's hard to know what the case was with him, if he was just purely evil and did this, or if there was something else. But I've always been so fascinated with that story.
That story is, it's still so interesting because we don't have all the answers, and quite honestly, we probably never will, but what is it, 50 or some years ago, this whole thing went down, and we're still talking about it today because it's still so intriguing. I love that story, and it's one of the reasons why I started loving ghost stories and paranormal stuff, because it was the first time where a movie or a story about this type of thing was considered to be true. They were actually saying, this happened, or this part of this happened. It was the first time as a nation, we kind of went, maybe there is something to some of this stuff that goes on.
Yeah. And I mean, it captivated me. I remember being a kid and getting the book from the library and just sitting outside on the porch and reading it in summer when I was like, I don't know, 10. And it just drew me in. I mean, in my office, I have two eye windows that are hanging on the wall because I love the story so much. And obviously the traumatic as hell for everyone who went through it. Obviously the family that was murdered, the DeFeo family, and then the Lutzes who moved in afterwards. But I've always just been so drawn into trying to find answers or just to learn more and more about that case. And never had a chance to talk with either of the children. We've talked about having an interview. I've talked with one of the sons on Facebook, and he's so elusive of if he'll talk or not. And that's never happened. But the closest I've ever gotten was had a conversation with Laura DiDio, who was the one of the reporters for Channel 5. And at the time, and she went in with Ed and Lorraine, and she was one of them who facilitated the whole thing happening after the fact, where they went and investigated with the Warrens and all that, and was there and with them, documented the whole thing. And that was one of the most fascinating interviews I've ever done. Just hearing her conversations about, you know, her and Ed and Lorraine meeting up at a coffee shop down the road, planning what they were going to do and what they talked about. And even more fascinating than that conversation, which is over on the Grave Talks, if anybody wants to hear it, it's about a year or two ago, is a portion that has never aired, will never air. It was my off the record conversation with her, where we ended up talking for like an hour. And there were so many interesting factoids that are not public that still linger to this day about that property that she's always kind of kept up on and has tried to talk with people about, that makes you really kind of go, there's more to this story. Where people dismiss it as, oh, it was a hoax. It was a hoax. No, I mean, I think there's still stuff. My opinion would be there's probably still stuff going on at that house today, even though most people have said, no, there's not.
I've always wanted to ask her, like, she was the frontline reporter for the local news station there, mm-hmm. when this all broke. And I wondered what it did to her career to be somebody who kind of covered this. If people looked at her afterward as, you know, a bad reporter or somebody who made up stories, or if it changed her career path because of being that person.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know the answer to that. I never asked her that question. I think it was just kind of, you know, it was obviously a very high profile story, and, you know, still is to this day. But I don't think it hurt her in any way. At least my opinion would be that it hadn't. I think it you know, probably elevated her a bit in terms of, you know, just someone who covers, you know, these type of stories, these interesting stories. And she's no longer in television or anything like that. But it was just so interesting to hear, you know, the account from someone who was there, because there's so few people around today that were there that, right. That are able to tell that story anymore. But anyway, so there you go. Ronnie DeFeo, go ahead.
I got into so much trouble because of that book. I mean, I snuck it from my parents because my mom did not want me reading it. Yeah. So I would read it in my bedroom. And then she'd walk in and catch me with it, and I would get chewed out. The book would be taken away. I'd never see it again. I'd have to go get another copy. I got caught 3 times with the book. And, you know, you think about a young guy, what is he getting caught reading? It wasn't that. It was this ghost story.
The Amityville Horror. That's great. Yep. Well, it was, it is such a fascinating story. Have you ever seen the documentary My Amityville Horror?
Yes. I did, and I did it because I heard your interview with him.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. And that's over on the Grave Talks as well. There's so many interesting facets to this story. If all you know about the Amityville Horror is the movie or the book, look at some of the stuff that the kids have said in the last 15, 20 years or so, because they have spoken about it, and it adds a whole new dimension to mm-hmm. the story, especially about George. And George isn't around anymore to speak for himself, but it really opens up things that were never said in the past about maybe his involvement, or possibly having something to do with bringing some of this on or into the house, maybe indirectly or not with any intention. But it may have something to do with it anyway.
I think that story and your interview made me realize how much we as human beings play a part in what comes through and how it comes through, mm-hmm. and how it affects other people around you. Even if they never experience anything in the house, how your life changes, how their life can change. Your interview and that story that he told really kind of opened my eyes to that.
Yeah, it's such a fascinating, fascinating story. So go check that out over in the Grave Talks if you want. And I'm hoping that more will be said in the coming years from the kids or anyone else that's still around to talk about it. I think I was talking with a friend of mine who's a police officer in New York City. Vinny, he calls into the show quite often. And he's the one who actually texted me that, because he takes the train every day, and he'll text me the subway train car where it says next stop Amityville, and then like all the signs that say Amityville along the way. I'll just see these random Amityville texts from him. And
if you go, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. And so he's the one who informed me of that one today.
If you go on Google Maps and you look at the house from Google Maps, it's blurred out now. You can't actually see it, which is a shame.
I know. It's like, if anything, to like make you wonder which house it is, or if you want to know which house it is, just look for the blurred out house. Then you'll know it's that house.
Right.
Otherwise, you may go, I don't know which one it is, because the eye windows aren't there anymore. I mean, if you know what you're looking for, you can find it.
Right.
But I think like that almost makes it more obvious that is the house. It's like, why not just like put like a big devil or something there? Like a meme or something. Like, yeah. Anyway, 855-853-4802 is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost stories with us. Let's go to our first letter. It says, hey guys, love the show. Listen to it when I'm walking in the woods and as I'm a bit of a goth. So my story is from the end of the 90s. I was living with a couple of flatmates in London. Two-story houses. It's the norm here, especially in the suburbs. It's a bit scary to a continental European, as we mainly live in a block of flats in the EU, but no bad vibes detected when moving in. However, one of my flatmates at some point started complaining that some of her stuff is going missing, and I would, in fact, find it in my bedroom. I thought she might be doing this on purpose because our relationship was deteriorating, but then other flatmates started complaining about the same problem. I thought I was going crazy until one day the flatmates told me they thought they had felt somebody in their bedrooms. At that point, they did not think it was me moving their stuff anymore. More precisely, something was going from my bedroom to theirs. Since I had had a lot of experiences with the paranormal in the past already, I had blissfully ignored some signs in my own bedroom, such as CDs not residing in the player after just having played them, or some of my items vanishing and then reappearing on my desk a bit later. After the complaints from the others, I started paying more attention and trying to make mental contact with whatever was there. Nothing happens until one sunny day, while talking across our mezzanine floor to one of the flatmates, I see her standing behind said flatmate, big bouncy skirts, full lacy top, hair in a bun, full-on 18th, 19th century clothes style. She was not doing anything, just standing there, looking over in my direction. The next thing I know, my flatmate has run over to my side, screaming her head off as she said I was not responding to her and was clearly looking at something behind her. So she figured it out and almost died in fear and ran over to me. She said it looked like I was having a bit of a turn, moving my mouth but not speaking. She was truly terrified. The thing is, I was not. I was super sure there was nothing malicious in the house and that it only wanted to get our attention for some reason. But after that, all of us were convinced the place was haunted. Things kept disappearing and reappearing somewhere else. Chimes would be heard playing behind curtains. We had no chimes. Footsteps would come up the stairs more than once. And strangest of all, a cat would appear in the house on stairs in the kitchen behind us. The cat was friendly and nothing bad was happening. We could not move out, so we decided to live with it. I was obsessed with trying to understand who the 18th century lady could be, but my research in the area did not unearth anything at all. One night, I go to bed, as usual, fall asleep, and get woken up by voices. I sit up on the bed and realize my room is not my room, but a sitting room library. At that point, the voices come closer to my door, and they all swirl in, a group of 18th century ladies, all smiling and chatting. They go sit in the middle of the room on a large rug on the floor, and I can tell they're trying to decide what to read, what book to pick, and I recognize our lady in residence. She gets up, looks at me, then goes to one of the bookshelves. Still looking at me, she gets one specific book, opens it, and shows me there's a letter inside. Then she looks incredibly sad, and she nods at me. Looks like she wants me to know the letter is in that book. She closes it, puts it back on the shelf with a thump. The thump wakes me up, just in time to see her rushing from that bookshelf. There was one in my real-life bedroom as well, towards the opposite wall. She disappears in there. I'm still sitting on the bed. I cannot sleep much that night and waited for the morning to tell the flatmates. Not sure they believe me, and I never had that vision or dream again afterwards. We also moved out not long after this for lots of different reasons, so perhaps I did not have a chance of another encounter. I believe the lady of the house was a rich woman with rich friends and perhaps a rich suitor who had written her a letter. She had to keep it secret, as in those times it would have been indecent. I also believe that something happened to her. Perhaps she died prematurely, as she was now frantically looking for a memory of her past life and that love letter. I cannot say why I think this is. Maybe I had other dreams of her I cannot remember fully. I also think my bookshelf was positioned where hers had been. And maybe, just maybe, if the house were not rented, would have opened that wall. We're talking typical thick Victorian house walls. I checked whether there was anything inside. Oh, I forgot to say that during the encounter, I noticed there was a fireplace in the room. So when I woke up, I went to the wall, realized it sounded hollow in the middle, and opened it up. It was only thin carton. There was a fireplace behind it. Thanks for reading. I hope you like my story. I have many others. Perhaps I'll write again. Keep doing what you're doing, and good luck with the farm, Monica. Interesting where they're having visions of what the property once was and seeing it in its original time.
And the story actually lends itself to a conversation that I was thinking about the other day about, can a location I think we know locations can have residual and also intelligent hauntings, but do they have to be separate hauntings, or can one spirit have intelligent hauntings and residual at the same time? I obviously don't have the answer, but this story tends to lean itself to that situation. Mm-hmm. He was experiencing things just kind of happening, the book club or whatever it was, the reading of that special letter. And yet they were having situations where things were gone missing, which would mean an intelligent haunt of some sort. So just kind of an interesting aside that I had this conversation like 2 days ago. If a spirit could actually intelligently and also residually haunt a location, this sounds like one of those situations.
I think it could. I think we as being living people can residually haunt things, because obviously it's not intelligent. I think residual is really nothing more than just energy replaying itself that's been imprinted, or for some reason it's stuck there. And I don't think you have to be dead to have created that. I think trauma can create that. I think anything that's going to be very emotionally, you know, involved, like I said, traumatizing, things of that nature, can end up being a residual thing. So in theory, I think we can haunt ourselves. Not necessarily like maybe seeing ourselves over and over, but I think sometimes that energy can play with the atmosphere, and it was created by us. But I think at the same point, you could be dead too. And if you have imprinted yourself for whatever happened at different places at different times, those can all be out there. But then the intelligent version of you can also be haunting somewhere as well.
Right. I wonder too, like, you know, when you go through a traumatic experience in your life and you just keep kind of reliving it in your mind,
sure,
if that in itself is not somehow related to residual haunting down the road, you know?
Yeah, where you kind of sit there and you ruminate on it over and over, and you're trying to make sense of it. And if that energy that's being expelled towards that event, because it was so traumatizing to that individual, that is what almost starts to create the repetition.
Well, I will say this. If that is the case, then anybody who lives in my house is in deep shit.
That's all I'm going to say. Exactly. It's like you got to ask, like, was the person who lived here anxious as shit? Like, yes. It's going to be haunted as hell. And yes, I know. Like every bad thing. It's like reliving over and over and over. It's an interesting way of thinking of things. I had not really kind of thought of it that way, but I think you're right. That could very well be why those things repeat over and over. Because once you're gone, is the energy still there that's still, you know, obsessing on it, or just the repetition of it? I don't know. 855-853-4802 is our phone number. Let's go to a caller. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, Tony. I was sitting here with my brother tonight. We were talking about something that happened to us about two, three years ago.
Yeah, about 2018. Yeah, 2018.
Me and Matt are brothers, and we are originally from Eastern Kentucky. And we have something that happened to us that seems... we're very... we haven't been listening to your show for a very long time. Yeah. But from what it seems, we have a story that seems quite unconventional for what is the norm on your show. Anyway, do you want to start off? Because you obviously remember it a lot better.
Yeah. Well, we have a pond that, a big fishing pond out behind our house, probably about, 100 feet off from the house, maybe 150 feet.
And we've been fishing it for
all our life.
Yeah, all our lives.
So we know the area pretty well. We, know all the neighbors. We know all the surroundings and all that. And, probably, you know, 3 years ago, we were out there fishing, and we saw something moving sort of on the other side of the lake, probably about, how far off would you say? Probably about
a football field.
Yeah.
High school football field.
Yeah. About 100 yards away, about a football field away. We saw something moving, rustling the trees, and we thought, well, you know,
it's a black bear.
Yeah, I thought, yeah, we thought it was a black bear or something, because we got black bears all over this part of the county. So we thought it was a black bear. So, you know, we just sort of started making noise and we had flashlights with us. Yeah, yeah. We started, you know, flashing our flashlights, just trying to get it to, you know, go off and do its own thing.
We may have been drinking a little bit.
No, just a little bit. Now, we would not have imagined this. So we thought, you know, oh, it's a black bear, just scared off. So we go back inside the house, probably about 11 or 11:30. We go back inside the house, and we just sort of do our, you know, we start to go off the bed, and we start hearing, like, rustling outside of our house. We start hearing
like
something.
It seemed like knocks.
Yeah.
Almost knocks in, like, pairs of three on, like, on the wall.
Yeah, it was sort of like, well, it was sort of like someone was, like, fumbling around outside. Yeah. Like, someone was trying to get onto the latches or trying to turn the knob or something like that. So, you know, we start to look outside, and we can sort of see the, I guess what the same thing at the lake was, outside of our window.
I swear it was this big.
Yeah, we, at this point, like, you know, we still kind of think it's a bear. Now we look back and...
What really stumbled me, though, is that in the light of the overhead, we could kind of tell that it was not a blackish color, which, you know, all we have of this area is, native of this area, black bears, and this had more of a brown tint.
Right. No, yeah, it was brown. So what we did was we, you know, at that point, you can't really do anything with a black bear. So we went upstairs to one of the bedrooms.
The next window above it.
Right. We went to the window that overlooks where the, you know, what we thought at the time was probably a bear was, because this bear was not giving up. This bear kept on.
Which is abnormal behavior for a bear, because usually you can scare one off and make a bunch of noise.
Right. Yeah. We were trying everything. We were, you know, clapping and, you know, playing stuff on our phones and stuff just to try to scare it off and, you know, hooping, hollering, everything, just trying to get to, you know, leave. Like, sometimes they'll come up looking for food at the doors and stuff. So we were just trying to get away from the door, and it wasn't leaving. So we went upstairs to the window.
Upstairs, this thing is pretty persistent, and we got a better look at it. And
it was not a bear.
I don't know what to tell you.
It was not a bear. We were, to this day, I will stand by this.
Hand on the Bible.
Hand on the Bible, it was not a bear. This thing looked like a man. It looked like
humanoid kind of hair.
Yeah, it was a hairy. I know when I say this, it sounds like fabrication or like a, you know, story or something. But I have never seen anything to this day that I would ever consider this. But it looks like what every single, you know, representation of Bigfoot looks like. It was this large, like a man.
Very bipedal.
It was standing up.
And I've tried to tell a story at maybe twice.
I've told it, like, mate, I just...
Every time I do, I cannot help but fumble through my words because my mind starts racing and I don't even know if I believe what I'm saying.
I know. I would not believe that if you weren't there, if my brother wasn't there.
If you weren't there, I wouldn't tell anybody.
See, I thought, when I woke up the next morning, I thought it was a dream. I thought I dreamt it, but then, you know, we walked through it again, and it, you know.
Really feverish experience.
Yeah, it was at least, you know, probably 6 foot, you know, it was tall. It was 6 foot.
Hard to gauge from the perspective.
Yeah, we were standing. And what we did was we threw a book. I remember this. This is part of the reason I know we didn't, you know, imagine that.
Cause I think we threw the Holy Bible at it.
I remember, yeah, we threw a big old, you know, hardcover book down at it. And when we did it, scampered, it ran away, you know, on two legs, whatever it was. It was not a person. It ran away on two legs. And it was, I don't know. Yeah, it ran away. So, I mean, I don't know if this is the kind of story y'all want to feature, you know, or anything, but it, you know, it's something that we just got sat talking about one night tonight. And we, I don't know, it's something that still makes me think a lot about to this day.
And it's not uncommon for stories like this to be shared across family and where we're from.
Yeah, no, you know, we hear,
see if stories similar to this have happened.
Yeah, especially in Appalachia. Yeah. We just want to hear if anyone else has had anything like that happen, just so, you know, we can get some kind of, you know, can we just want to know what that thing was we saw that night.
Kind of solid.
Yeah, I guess that's true. We just want a closure on it, I guess. But no, that was probably one of the scariest moments of my, you know, just seeing that thing that I never can explain it.
Yeah, same here. And if you have any input with your expertise, just
please definitely let us know.
Call this number back, anything.
Yeah, no, we appreciate y'all hearing us out, but yeah.
Appreciate you listening if you did, and God bless everything.
Yeah, God bless. Y'all have a good night.
Interesting story. We normally don't talk about Bigfoots and stuff on the air, but I do wonder sometimes about Bigfoots or any sort of cryptid type thing. Are they in fact some sort of species that we are unaware of, or do they fall into the world of ghosts and things that, because sometimes you have stories where they almost appear and disappear, and it can vary a bit.
This is so weird. I've got a couple of points. First off, these two guys need a podcast because
they're great.
That was an entertaining call, and the fact that they had to clarify that, yes, they did have a few drinks, you know, beforehand.
Yeah.
Just a really great story. But the odd thing is, and this has happened a couple of times, I was prepared to ask you, in case we had nothing else to talk about before I found out about Ronnie DeFeo, was whether or not when you think of paranormal, you can think about things like Sasquatch, Bigfoot, aliens, if it all ties together. I was going to ask you that as our way to kind of start a conversation today. So it's odd that this came up. And I actually had some statistics here because there was just a recent online poll on you.gov about whether or not people believed in Bigfoot. 33% said definitely fake. Another 26 said probably fake. Only like 23% of people think that it's a possibility. And I'm kind of surprised by that because you do hear reports like this.
Mm-hmm.
And I, like you, kind of wonder about the connection between spirituality, ghosts, energies, and other stuff that we just don't understand right now.
Yeah, and that's the thing with it. I mean, I would not be remotely surprised if there is some sort of creature that's out there that's just, you know, fairly, you know, elusive and knows how to really not be caught by people for the most part. I think that could be. But there's so many reports of things like the Bigfoot, and every region has a version of a Bigfoot story. And then there's other variations, too, where it's not even necessarily, you know, the Harry and the Hendersons looking thing. It's like Goatman and things of that nature.
Yep.
There's a gentleman in Wisconsin down in the West Bend area, Eric. I forgot his last name, but he wrote a book about it, and I've had him on the show, and he's done research on that, and that one almost really gets into the territory of something supernatural going on, because people will see this thing as if it were, you know, a Bigfoot type character, but it has like the head of a goat, and it almost has like demonic you know, features to it, and it appears, it disappears just as a ghost or a spirit would, not so much, you know, some creature that's living out there. But then it makes me wonder if all of it, you know, do these things, is there something there? Where are these Bigfoots able to disappear and reappear, which would make it not necessarily part of the food chain that's out in the woods? It's something else. But obviously, I don't have the answers to it, but I do think that it all can interconnect. I think the possibilities are certainly there, and I'm always interested to hear where those two areas kind of overlap, because I think a lot of that doesn't really get talked about.
Right. And I think too, you think about how some spirits will project themselves as something that they're not. Here again, this could be an energy projecting itself as this and it not be that at all. We don't know, but what a great story.
Yeah, they were great. And what was really entertaining about it is these two, they were constantly just walking up to talking over each other, but they didn't.
Oh my gosh. And to, you can't tell the two apart. So honestly, Tony, I mean, this could have been one guy playing both parts. We just don't know.
He's throwing his voice. But no, they were great. I was just like, wow, they're really entertaining. And they're just boom, 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 boom. Like, you should be in radio or podcasting.
They've got a great rapport together.
They
definitely
do. That was funny. Thank you for calling and sharing that story, and we'd love to hear more from you. If you have anything else that happens that you want some insight on, that's going to wrap up today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online. If you like the show, keep us on the air. Become an extra podcast person, an EPP at ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. Until next time, for Todd and all of us at Real Ghost Stories Online, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.